Hello, it's very good to be here. These are my emergency glasses, so I hope that I'm going to... And I've just seen the poster again and seen that this is a celebration, so I hope that this is going to be a celebratory talk. Pablo Neruda is a pen name. Neruda's birth name was Neftali Ricardo Reyes Basualto. He is almost routinely considered the greatest Latin American poet of the 20th century, in a continent which is known for great poets. And he's quite regularly put forward as the greatest poet of his era anywhere in the world, which is surprising given that he was a communist for the last 30 years of his life. To the extent that these rankings have any significance beyond the fun of compiling them, I must say that in this case I'm with the majority and can think of no greater poet during the last century in Latin America or anywhere else. Indeed, if I were to be asked for a list of, say, the greatest political poets of the 20th century, I would immediately think of Neruda. And his Canto General, General Song, would be very close to the top of the list of great political poetry collections. And if I were asked for a list of the greatest love poets of the 20th century, likewise, Neruda would be top or close. And ditto if I were asked for a list of the greatest poets of nature, especially the sea, or indeed of the great surrealist poets. You would always, I think, come up with Neruda. This talk's going to be rather brief, and for that reason it may seem rather assertive, but I don't have time to argue, so to speak. Of what other poet could all these things be claimed, even remotely? Especially a poet so prolific, because Neruda's poems have been calculated roughly as extending between 4,000 and 5,000 pages. That's a lot of poems. And come to that, what other poet could have been so admired equally by the three Latin American novelists who, like Neruda, won the Nobel Prize for Literature? Miguel Ángel Asturias, Gabriel García Márquez, Mario Vargas Llosa, all of them great devotees, even Vargas Llosa, whose politics are so different from those of the great Chilean poet. Vargas Llosa's mother, abandoned by his father, kept Neruda's 20 love poems on her dressing table throughout his childhood in the 1940s. And everyone who knows about Latin America knows that Che Guevara carried Neruda's poems with him throughout his last campaign in Bolivia. Of course, none of this is to say that Neruda was a perfect human being, but then none of us are. And more than most, his imperfections are admitted in his poetry. And come to that, his life and character were like his poetry. The poetry doesn't always reach the highest standards, as many opposing critics have pointed out, but it reaches the heights more often than that of most other poets that I know. And he had dozens of character faults, and he did dozens of weak or shameful things in his endlessly active and dramatic life. But the virtues, the heroic things he did, were often astonishing and tend to make the weaknesses look venial. It seems to me. There are biographers who disagree with this, but that's how I see it. What of his place of birth? Chile is a curious country, 2,650 miles long, but only an average of 110 miles wide. It occupies a long, narrow strip of land between the Andes Mountains to the east and the Pacific Ocean to the west. It goes from some of the world's driest deserts in the north to some of the world's rainiest forests in the south. But its essence, undoubtedly, is its material existence, standing between the mountains on the one hand and the ocean on the other. Neruda was very much from this strange country, his natural world, his place, and this very strange republic, which was his historical world, his time, so to speak. He was born into a poor family in Parral, a small town in the Chilean deep south, in 1904. His mother, a schoolteacher, died when he was 2 months old, and his father, who was a railway man, he was lots of things, but especially a railway man, remarried, or more accurately, married his mistress. Instead of resenting his stepmother, Neruda, and this is typical of him, adored her. Come to that, unfortunately, he adored most women that he met, which is a big part of his biography. Between 1910 and 1920, he went to school in the southern city of Temuco, and there he was befriended by the poet Gabriela Mistral, another schoolteacher, like his mother. A schoolteacher who, incredibly, would become the first Latin American to win the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1945. The second poet to do so would be Neruda, who she befriended and mentored when he was a boy from nowhere in the 1910s. So Chile first and second in Nobel Prizes for Literature. Extraordinary. He was already interested in poetry by the time of his early adolescence. He moved to the capital, Santiago, in 1921 to train as a French teacher. In 1923, he published his first collection of poems, Crepusculario, at the age of 19. And then a year later, at the age of 20, he published what remains his best-known collection, even now, the 20 poemas de amor y una canción desesperada, 20 love poems and a song of despair. Undoubtedly the most widely read collection of love poems in the Spanish language. Written by a poet 20 years of age and still dazzling lots of first readers and teaching them how to speak about love almost a century later. Extraordinary thing. We should be hearing one of the most famous of these poems a little later. In Latin America, writers, I've just remembered actually as I say this, that when I, in my first year in university, I was a bit of a sued, I suppose, I got an EP of Neruda poems read by Christopher Logue, translated by him and read with a jazz background. And you can get it on YouTube, and I recommend that you do. It's quite an extraordinary thing. Sounds even more extraordinary all these years later. And it's five of the poems from this first collection. In Latin America, writers have traditionally been offered diplomatic posts, though most such offers have been made to middle and upper class writers, of course. But such was Neruda's celebrity that he was inducted into the Foreign Service in 1927 and sent to Burma, possibly not such a good posting, and there he met somebody who was called, although she was Burmese, Josie Bliss, a beautiful Burmese woman with whom he had a turbulent affair, described in his autobiography, and who is exalted, cursed, but above all mythologized in his subsequent poetry, especially in the famous Tango del Viudo, or Widower's Tango, from 1928, in which he recalls their affair and mentions, incidentally, how much he detests the English that he meets in Burma. We'd have all detested them too, I'm sure. In 1930, he moved on to Colombo, then Ceylon, and there he married a pretty Dutch bank clerk, the hapless Maria Antonieta Hagemar, by whom he had a daughter, his only known child, who would die at the age of 8. And we know very little about either of them. Neruda was a poet who moved on. Morally, ideologically, philosophically, this period, 1925 to 1935, was the most difficult period in the whole of his life. Though let's face it, it was one of the darkest periods in millions of people's lives, a terrible time. And the result in Neruda's case, poetically, was the poems of Residencia en la Tierra, Residence on Earth. One of the great literary documents of that confused era, marked above all by surrealism, and a collection so profoundly pessimistic and profoundly stunning that Neruda would later say it was harmful to young minds and should be kept away from them. He was probably not altogether sincere in this statement, made perhaps for the Communist Gallery later on, but many critics, especially those who hate what Neruda was going to do next, insist that this gloomy, exploratory, echoing, and almost despairing collection, Residencia en la Tierra, is his greatest collection of all. A lot of people think that, a lot of poetry critics. In 1934, the once again extraordinarily successful young poet moved on to Spain to become Chilean consul, first in Barcelona, and then Madrid. Neruda is one of those people who seems to be a lucky man because all the things that he did in life were things that appeared to prepare what he needed to do. But of course, he was one of those poets who was able to integrate all his experience into his writing. There in Spain, he met many of the great Spanish poets of that great poetic era, in which Spanish verse was born anew after hundreds of years. Most notably, Federico García Lorca and Rafael Alberti. And he also met many outstanding Latin Americans, most notably César Vallejo, his great rival for the position of greatest Latin American poet of the century, who was another communist, and Octavio Paz, the Mexican, who would later become his most formidable rival and adversary, who also would win the Nobel Prize later on. And Neruda also met the Argentinian painter and intellectual Delia del Carril, who, though 20 years older than him, would be his companion for the next 20 years. When the Spanish Civil War broke out in 1936, and after Lorca was murdered, Neruda became radicalized, and all the negative things which he had experienced in the European colonies became incorporated retrospectively into his vision of the world. One might say, from his point of view, that he began the move from capitalist imperialist darkness to revolutionary light. Physically, he moved to Paris and began to help Spanish exiles migrate to Chile. He was well on his way to becoming a communist. Like Vallejo, like Alberti, like the Cuban Nicolas Guillén, and other writers and artists of that era, there were many communists, especially poets. There never have been very many Spanish communist novelists, but lots of communist poets. He published a collection called España en el Corazón, Spain in Our Hearts, and you'll be hearing its most famous poem, Explico Algunas Cosas, a little bit later. In 1940, he became Chilean consul in Mexico City, one of the two or three most important Latin American cities, and a meeting point always for Latin American artists and intellectuals. After 1943, now officially, though apparently illegally, married to Delia del Carril, he returned to Chile and began to take part actively in national political life. He also traveled to Guatemala, where he met Miguel Ángel Asturias, the novelist, who was something like his narrative twin brother, and Peru, where he visited enraptured the archaeological zone of Machu Picchu, which would inspire his famous political mythological poem, Alturas de Machu Picchu, the heights of Machu Picchu, which would eventually be incorporated into his great political document, Canto General. In 1945, Neruda finally joined the Communist Party of Chile and was elected senator for Antofagasta and Tarapacá. He gave strong support to the successful presidential candidate, Gabriel González Videla, in 1946, but felt betrayed by him in the following months and made a famous Zola-like "J'accuse, I accuse" speech against him in 1948, and then lived clandestinely for a year, moving from house to house without ever being betrayed before escaping into exile to Argentina. This epic experience is a crucial part of Neruda's public myth. In Buenos Aires, he used Miguel Ángel Asturias' passport, they looked quite like each other, to move on to Europe, and he spent the next 3 years traveling the world before returning to Mexico. Early in the period, in 1950, he published, finally, his Canto General, General Song. The title doesn't translate very well and is usually left in Spanish. Widely considered the greatest long political poem or collection of political poems of the 20th century, though one should say that quite a large minority of critics consider that many of the poems are vitiated by their political content or orientation. It may be that this is a genuinely open debate, or it may be that you like it if you're a socialist and you don't if you're not. Those of you who haven't read it yet can decide for yourselves. It certainly is a book that reads you anyway, the Canto General. I would agree that some are not great, a few are even terrible, but I would say that most are not. We'll be hearing the Carta a Miguel Otero Silva, letter to Miguel Otero Silva, in a few minutes. It's a poem about the communication between three communists, Neruda, the Cuban poet Nicolás Guillén, and the Venezuelan writer Miguel Otero Silva. But its brilliant obliqueness and complexity and sheer whimsicality belie its undeniable political core and make it, first and last, a poem, a great poem. Quite apart from its poetic virtues, the Canto General is one of the great Latin American documents, historical document, document of its era, document about what it means to be a Latin American. In many respects, Neruda's contribution to the identity and interpretation of his continent can be compared with that of the Mexican muralist Diego Rivera. They're quite often compared for the enormity of the scope of what they set out to do. These people, like Neruda's friend Asturias, produced a new mythological history of Latin America, which went back to the Amerindian civilizations and cultures before the Spaniards arrived, to invent and to give substance to a mestizo culture, a mixed culture, which would be based both on the materialism of Darwin, Marx and Freud, and on the Parisian surrealism of the 1920s, which was also largely Freudian and Marxist. This is too complicated to explain and justify here, even if I could do it, and must remain, like the rest of this brief lecture, at the level of assertion. One might say, at any rate, that the Neruda who moved from Residencia en la Tierra, the anguished, alienated, surrealist collection of the late 20s and early 30s, the Neruda who moved from that to the Canto General had moved in a way from an emphasis on the mystery of existence to an emphasis on its magic. The magic of which he speaks is the elemental material experience that all of us have in childhood, the relation between the world and our perception of it, but which only artists, especially poets, remain entirely and continuously in touch with for the rest of their lives. Two of the poems you're going to hear, Births and This Is Where We Live, exemplify this magical materiality. In 1952, Neruda returned permanently to Chile and thereafter ended his relationship with Delia del Carril. He was always ruthless in love, and set up his home in the wild beach resort of Isla Negra with a new wife, Matilde Urrutia, in 1956. She was his junior by 8 years, though she always considered him, as she said, an overgrown boy. One of the things that people who know Neruda, and I've met quite a lot of them, always said about him was that he was like a spoiled child. If you said he couldn't have something, he would start to cry. He wouldn't really, but it was something that he did to just make people do whatever he wanted. I've never tried it myself, but apparently it worked very well if you were Neruda. He was involved in numerous political controversies, some merely ideological and some relating to specific events. After the Mexican muralist David Alfaro Siqueiros was imprisoned following his failed attempt to assassinate Trotsky in Mexico in 1940, Neruda helped him to get out of prison and find exile in Chile. Neruda had arrived in Mexico as consul just 4 days before the second successful attempt a few months later, and this, together with his actions on behalf of Siqueiros, raised lots of suspicions about Neruda. His enemies have always maintained that he was involved in the assassination, but no convincing evidence has ever been found. After Stalin died in 1953, and more particularly after the 1956 revelations about the crimes of Stalin's regime, Neruda was slower than most to face the facts, though it's only fair to say that communism has never been the greatest danger to life in Latin America, as it has in other places, and that for most of the 20th century, the communist dream was a formidable rival to the American one. Still, Neruda did write a notorious and famous ode to Stalin, in which he salutes, and I quote, "El capitán lejano, que al entrar en la muerte dejó a todos los pueblos como herencia su vida." That faraway captain who, as he entered death, left all men and women as his legacy, his life. For the rest of his own life, Neruda, like almost all other communists, had to live with the truth that everything that Stalin had ever done for communism and the Soviet Union had been undone by his tyranny and the cynicism and brutality with which he had undertaken his mission. As a corrective to this, one might offer Neruda's poem A Mi Partido, to my party, 1949, which in imitation of the Christian creed gives a moving explanation for his political beliefs, ending as it does with the statement, "You have made me see the world's clarity and the possibility of happiness. You have made me indestructible, because with you I do not end in myself." I looked it up the other day on Google, and there it is on the homepage of the Indian Communist Party to this very day. A mi partido, to my party. After the triumph of the Cuban Revolution in 1960, Neruda wrote an epic salute to that historic achievement and a poem to Castro himself. Fidel, Fidel, los pueblos te agradecen, palabras en acción y hechos que cantan. Por eso desde lejos te he traído una copa de vino de mi patria. Fidel, Fidel, we give thanks for words as acts and acts which sing. And so, from my far-off country, I bring you a glass of wine. I admit I could have tried harder with this translation. In 1966, however, the Young Turks of the New Revolution made a violent attack on Neruda because he had attended a meeting of what they considered the Petty Bourgeois Writers' Union, the Pen Club, in New York. And so the Cubans effectively rejected him, the greatest communist poet in Latin America, as a poetical and political father of the Latin American revolutions. He became a traitor. It was probably the single biggest politico-aesthetic public mistake ever made by the Cuban revolutionaries, and Neruda never forgave them, either publicly or privately. So for the rest of his life, he never went to Cuba, he never talked to any of them, he never had anything to do with it. Excuse me. In 1970, the Chilean Communist Party named him their presidential candidate, but he withdrew in favor of the socialist leader, Salvador Allende, for whom he campaigned. By this time, Neruda was suffering the first serious effects of prostate cancer. He was also triggering one of the two great mysteries which have been discussed ever since his death. The first was how important was an affair which he embarked upon with Alicia, the niece of his third wife, Matilde Urrutia. The niece was in her 30s while he was 65 and had prostate cancer. Most critics and historians believe that the affair was very important and it inspired his late books of love poems, La Espada Encendida and La Rosa Separada, The Separated Rose, from 1970 and 1972. If it really was important, and I believe it was, we can say that the importance was also symbolic. Alicia was a relatively uneducated, ordinary woman, and in a way she returned the poet to his early days in Chile, when, as a young working-class student, he made the first connection between Chile's natural landscapes and the young women of his own class that he knew and loved. The other mystery is the cause of his death. It is said that Matilde persuaded him to leave Chile in order to make him leave Alicia. Salvador Allende named him ambassador to France after winning the 1970 election, and Neruda spent the next 3 years in Paris, during which period he won the Nobel Prize in 1971. But he was back in Isla Negra in Chile on the 11th of September 1973 when Allende was overthrown and died. As you know, there was a long period during which the question as to whether Allende committed suicide or was murdered assassinated by the soldiers of the regime. Allende was overthrown, and Neruda himself died 12 days later, on the 23rd of September, 1973. There have been persistent rumors since that time that he was poisoned by the new dictatorship. And although his recent exhumation, he's been exhumed this year to find out whether this was or what was not the case, has not turned up any proof of this, the exhumation and the tests have also been disputed, and it could easily be true that he was murdered. In a way, I personally would be quite surprised if he were not murdered by the new regime, but that's me. At any rate, those two great Chileans, Allende and Neruda, died within 2 weeks of one another, and their deaths will forever mark a bitter point of reference in the history of Chile, just as they have in the lives of many of us who remember that time. His funeral, attended by hundreds of ordinary Chileans, was the first act of resistance against the coup d'etat. And if Neruda had lived, he would have been an extraordinary focus of resistance. So the least that can be said is that his death was very convenient. He is, as mentioned, one of the very greatest poets of the 20th century, in my opinion. In any case, he's almost certainly one of the most absolutely popular. This means, due to the very natural human tendency, the jealousy, that when people dislike him, they dislike him very much. The more so because, as in the case of the novelist Gabriel Garcia Marquez, another communist sympathizer for much of his life, his enemies can scarcely believe and can scarcely bear that such a political poet is also so popular. Let me conclude then with yet another refashioning of my opening remarks. Neruda is, in my sincerely humble opinion, one of the greatest poets of the 20th century, for all his contradictions, because he was, in my opinion, the most life-enhancing poet of the 20th century. Thank you very much.